Well, hello everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Deeper. I'm Austin Slater, that's Dan Kinnis, and Dan, I have one of the most pressing conversation or questions for you. It's a very important theological question with salvific ramifications. We're finally fully in fall. We can officially say that. Our trees have no more leaves. And Christmas is coming up, which means I need your pastoral knowledge. When can we start decorating for Christmas? Oh, yeah. And when can we start singing Christmas music? Because those two sometimes are a little different. So what's your take on that?
Yeah. Well, this has been a debate in our household, right? So, you know, if you asked my wife, Liz, she would say, why haven't you started yet? It's November. She's happy to turn on the station, and my kids might have a different opinion about, especially the Christmas music piece. Not time yet, but yeah, I know. We've been driving around even in our neighborhood. There's quite a few houses that have Christmas lights up, and those decorations are going, not just out, but they're lit up, right? And they're going already. And
stores are already playing the music. Oh, yeah. It's crazy. It's almost like they go by the Canadian system, honestly, which... You know, I'm married to a Canadian, so it kind of works out well because we have our Canadian Thanksgiving in October. So it's like once Halloween's done, it's kind of a free-for-all.
Yeah, there's nothing in between. We don't really, I think everybody, a lot of people love the holiday for Thanksgiving here in the States too, but there's not usually a ton of decor going on. There's not really a...
fall adjacent.
Yeah, there's not like a whole host of Thanksgiving music CDs out there from popular artists.
And honestly, that's something I hadn't thought about till now, but we have tons of Christmas music. We have tons of Halloween music. There is no Thanksgiving music. So if you're listening to this and you have musical talent that I do not have... that's your new job. Make Thanksgiving music for us. Yeah. Help us figure this out.
There's a few out there, mostly comedic, but there are a few interesting ones out there. So,
awesome. Well, thank you for indulging my whimsy. Dan, what did we talk about on Sunday? We're continuing on in this fruit of the spirits. Fruits of the spirit. I think by now I'd got the order.
No, that's all right. Yeah, we're up to gentleness this week. So we're almost at the end of this series. We just have one more coming up, but gentleness toward the end there, and so we talked about that. What is it? How does it come to bear in our lives? You know, maybe what is it not? Why is it so hard to practice? A lot of different things there, and seeing too, and it was interesting to dive into it from the biblical context, the different ways it comes up, Old and New Testament, and we talked about how in the Old Testament, God's not really connected with this characteristic. And maybe that makes sense because he's on high, and then when Jesus comes around, you start hearing him talk about that and being referred to that way. And so, yeah, just interesting. And I think very relevant because there's always conflicts going on. There's always a struggle for what should we be doing as Christians or how should we be reacting to things maybe going on culturally? What kind of spirit is that done in? Where do we stand up? Where do we kind of accept? So I think... this points to the nature, at least, of how we should do that, even if it doesn't give wisdom for exactly when always we should take one tact or another.
I did really appreciate your highlighting the fact that this is something that really usually shows up when things don't go our way, that a lack of gentleness is often a response to something failing in our plans. And I just thought that was a very interesting point that I hadn't really thought of before.
Yeah, that's why it's the fruit of the spirit, right? Because... we can naturally be pretty good people when things are just going according to my plan. But when things, you know, it just came clear to me when something or someone is standing in my way, that's when the flesh comes out, right? And we start getting sometimes a little nastier or passive aggressive, maybe is the way we do that around here in the Midwest sometimes. But nevertheless, right, the encouragement to think about, yeah, how do we react even when things aren't going well or according to plan, and gentleness really shows itself in those situations.
It does. And one thing I'd like to specifically ask you about is, you highlighted this a little bit, but I'd love to dive a little more into this, is the fact that you said gentleness is a combination of humility and meekness. And we talk a lot about humility, but meekness isn't really something we discuss much as a church. We know it's just kind of it's like gentleness, it's a synonym. But in our culture, especially in our American culture, meekness is considered a negative trait. So in our biblical context, what is meekness And then why should we aspire to that if our mm-hmm. culture says that that's not something good to have?
Yeah, it's always so interesting, right? Language-wise, sometimes we have less words than maybe the language we're studying. Sometimes we have more. So interestingly enough, and the reason I made that connection is because you look at the Old Testament, the Greek translation, where maybe we have meekness or humility. It's often the same word for gentleness that we see in Galatians 5. And so you know these are very closely connected, right? That Psalm 37, the meek will inherit the earth. It's the same word in the Greek translation for both. So yeah, a lot of overlap there. But you're right, we don't use that word too often because it rhymes with weakness. That's often been associated. Well, meekness means weakness. And we talked about that with gentleness too. Mm-hmm. But in general, right, this approach to situations and our relationships, when I think about meekness and maybe this almost the opposite of a prideful view, I would think the opposite of meekness so much is arrogance and kind of coming in like, well, I know what's best in this situation for everyone. And so I come in with that kind of force behind me versus an idea of, oh, maybe I need to learn some things here. Maybe I need to think about the way I approach this. Maybe I need to see it a little differently and not overstating my importance. And again, you could say that about humility too. It's, I know they're closely related, but again, because Jesus talks about this, especially in the Beatitudes, right? Blessed are the meek. Blessed, that's no small word from him to say that and to highlight that characteristic. And then the promise with it from Psalm 37, for they will inherit the earth, which for God's people in the Old Testament was everything. This was the whole promise, the land. And for us now, we talk about the kingdom. And so that's a huge deal. You know, and Jesus may be saying in some way versus those who are trying to forcefully take this on their own or do it not in his way. Here's the way that actually the inheritance will happen. So, yeah, it's not a word we use a ton now, but maybe it is something we should in the church mm-hmm. talk about a little bit more or even encourage, like we've talked about with some of the fruit previous weeks when we've gotten together to say we need to encourage these characteristics as well.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. And that really connects well with one of the next things I wanted to ask you about. Because, you know, like you were saying, you're talking about how gentleness does not equal weakness. And I loved the way you put this. Gentleness is a filter that channels our action towards God's plan, not our plans. Which, first off, that's just such a helpful way of looking at gentleness as a filter for our action rather than just a flavoring of the action,
yeah.
I suppose.
Yeah.
So I really appreciated that. And I also appreciated you highlighting that sometimes, even in the church, we say that, you know, gentleness has its place, but sometimes you just need to get stuff done. Mm. There was a Christian leader a few years ago who said something along the lines of, you know, sometimes you just run out of other cheeks to turn and you need to just kind of take a stand. Mm-hmm. And that's not a Christ-like attitude to have, as we talked about. So why do you think this gentleness is optional attitude has started to impact people of faith, and how can we combat that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems to come around, right, when we are feeling pressed, and things maybe aren't going, as we said, according to plan. And I think now, at least in the Western church and probably especially in the American church, because the culture has shifted and we often refer to ourselves in a lot of ways as a post-Christian society now. Well, that's a big change for a lot of people. And to feel that, to feel the culture changing, it feels like, well, we got to do something about this. And just the reality, we get impatient. Okay, God, you know, we've been waiting for a while. Seems like you're not going to do anything, so I must have to take matters into my own hands, right? And then, you know, we come about different solutions, and it's got to go according to my timetable and plan. And so, yeah, I think that's a lot of it. Again, when things are kind of going well, say it's just our local church here. If things are going well, you have a lot of people joining, you don't feel that tension of, well, we got to take some sort of decisive action. And again, this is not to say that we shouldn't take some actions at some times. It's just, again, the way we do that. And a lot of times our solutions become more and more forceful the more desperate we get or the more bleak that we think things are. And so that might be some of that. And this is nothing new. If you go across church history, it's not like, or even in scripture, you can look and see when some of these kind of actions come about. And it's usually, as we said, when things aren't going according to plan or, again, especially our plan. You know, you see that. I was thinking about Jeremiah the prophet recently. And, you know, all the fighting back against him when he's saying, well, God's saying that, you know, this is happening with Babylon. We're going to go into exile. So you just need to, in this case, receive that and settle down there and go through some things. But that was not what a lot of people wanted to hear. And you can understand where that was hard. And even after it happens, you know, they have a leader that's put into power there at the time. And then some others come and kill him, right? Just this kind of, well, no, he's leading the people away again. And this can't be happening. And so I think in the desperate times, or at least what we perceive as desperate situations, it often brings this out of us, right? Mm-hmm. And so I want to be empathetic toward these responses because it is hard. And we feel like, oh, we're losing something here. There's grief going on. People are leaving the church. That church's viewpoint's not being heard the way it was before. And that's not easy to deal with. And that's why we need to hear this word from Galatians and elsewhere to say, yeah, okay, that is the reality. How can we be speaking and acting into this well in Christ-like ways, as you said?
And I really appreciated you saying that that perspective is needed, because from our perspective, things can be going to hell in a handbasket. Mm-hmm. And that's really important to recognize, like we've been talking about this whole series, the eternal perspective, mm-hmm. and that our perspective is so limited. Mm-hmm. So just thank you for highlighting that point there. One of the practical elements you talked about was practicing gentleness in our relationships to power. Mm. So if we're in a position where we have power and authority, we're supposed to wield it gently. If we're on the receiving end of someone wielding power, whether that is well or poorly, we are supposed to respond with gentleness. But that gets tricky. How can we respond to gentleness when there's these grave injustices going on? There's so many systemic problems in our world that are incredibly painful and hard to watch. And we as normal people really have no way to fix any of that or influence it. And it's very helpless to see life-altering injustice happening. So are there any examples then of gentleness actually solving these grave systemic injustices? What can we learn from those?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there are. You know, when you look over history, I mean, when I look even at the church itself, which came to birth, as it were, in the Roman Empire, right, where there was plenty of injustices going on, and you know, certainly from the viewpoint of the Jewish nation at the time, like, this is not a good power here. And yet the church thrived, not by, you know, fighting back necessarily against the empire, but by being Christ-like. And you think about, it's really a wonder to think about how in just a couple hundred years, Christianity would become kind of the religion of the empire. And not through any kind of revolutionary overthrow, but just, I think a lot of times, like, what are these Christians doing? How are they being in these communities? They're going in where there's plagues in these cities and working with people, and they care about each other in a unique way. So that, even from the church's history, is maybe one example. And I think another, as we think of ourselves as a reformed arm of the faith, too, you think about the Reformation, noting that along the way of the years, there was plenty of violence that came about in that. But you think about what many note as the starting point was very much a non, you know, here's Luther putting up these 95 theses, certainly confrontational, but not, you know, violent, not this kind of forceful, just trying to raise some things and talk about who we are. And so I think even the start for us Reformed churches comes from that kind of activity. Yeah, and beyond that, too, I think there's lots of other examples. I mean, certainly in this country, we could talk about, like, Martin Luther King Jr., of course, and that arm of the civil rights movement, which very intentionally went about things that way. And again, I know there were other arms of that movement that were not, but in that case, it's certainly very effective. We see some of the impacts of that still. Not every problem was solved, of course, but there was a lot of positive things that came about, I believe, not only because of what was being spoken into in some of the injustices, but the way that was approached. Similar kind of issue. I might have mentioned this in a sermon one time, but Daryl Davis, I don't know if you ever heard of Daryl Davis, right? He's a kind of an R&B blues musician. He's probably in his 60s now. Anyways, he became connected with kind of this things going on with the Ku Klux Klan, right? He's an African-American guy and just trying to understand that. And he went about in this way, well, I'm just going to talk to these folks and get to know them, even befriend them. And it had profound impact, several turning in their robes, right? Even some prominent leaders.
I think over 100 members left the KKK because of that.
And just here's a totally gentle kind of approach. He wasn't going and attacking them. He was trying to understand, like, how could you hate someone you never knew? I think that's somewhere close to the title of his book that he wrote. You know, we had Pastor Tim here for several years as well, too, and he's been on this course with us as well. But he served in the Philippines. The Philippines story is marked by a gentle revolution, right? What was it called? Like the People Power Revolution, right, in the mid-80s there. And that was largely marked, again, by this kind of nonviolent. We've been under this dictatorship. A lot of injustice is going on, but this is the way we're going to speak into it. And it changed things, right? The leadership changed, and even relative of one of those prominent politicians who had been killed under the previous regime ended up being the next president, right? And so I think that's just a few examples, and there's probably others where you could see that there is real power. Again, it's not doing nothing. It's not ever, you know, not ever taking a stand or being decisive, but again, it shows to the way, the character of God in that. And again, trusting in his plan, his timing. And part of that's knowing when we need to maybe say, yeah, we need to say something about this and go about it too. One thing I didn't mention in the message was the connection to that passage in Proverbs. It's Proverbs 15 that talks about how a gentle answer turns aside wrath and reminds me that gentleness, really what's being said there, it's the stronger of the two. It can turn aside wrath. And of course, the story of Jesus is that, I think, in the largest overall picture. He is the gentle answer who turns aside God's wrath from us. And so to think about that, here's the ultimate victory. And again, it's won by that character of God, by that way of going about things. And we didn't really go into that piece, but the enemy throws all the hatred techniques he can and weapons at Jesus, but he does not respond back in that way. He responds back in God's way and wins the battle. So that should be convincing and confirming to us, too, that this is the way to go.
Absolutely. And it's really important to remember these historical examples of this happening because it's so easy for us to get blinded by the moment that we do end up falling into this, well, gentleness isn't working.
Right.
So I just really appreciate you reminding us of that. We're supposed to look to the example of Jesus, which is, again, the gentle answer turning away wrath. But even Jesus had some moments where he wasn't exactly gentle, calling the pastors of the time whitewashed tombs and dens of vipers is not exactly a gentle statement. And then even more so the time when he went and he braided a whip, which we don't talk about much, but he went and took the time and braided this whip and overturned the tables in the temple. Is there ever a time, do you think, that we can safely say, this is my turn to braid the whip and overturn the tables? Or is that righteous anger reserved for Jesus alone?
It's a great question. I appreciate you bringing it up for our conversation because I think, yeah, we want to explore this and talk about it together. And where's the wisdom in that? Calvin, when he wrote about that passage of the overturning of the tables and that, and he just, you know, I think gently perhaps reminded us, remember who is doing this. And so that's important, right? Jesus is the Messiah. He is the ultimate judge. And so he is in that office, right? And he is, you know, one greater than any prophets here, right? And so there is that reminder of who he is. And we can't take that place on ourselves, which is a danger, right? Sometimes we make ourselves out to be, we are the great prophets. We know all the truth. That being said, I would say that there are times to stand up, right, and talk about these things. And so maybe a couple of things worth noting from, especially from that temple scene. One is to note that that's happening within the church. And the temple, of course, is the center of the Jewish religion, the Jewish faith of God's people at that time. And so Jesus isn't going to the Roman Empire and saying, you guys are way off, you know, look what you're doing with pigs here and, you know, whatever. He's within the church. And I think that's something for us to remember. So often we want to go dictate to the world and, oh, they're doing these things, they're doing that, and we want to respond in kind. Probably the best place for a pretty serious conversation about this and sometimes to maybe more strongly, we might say, stand up for some things going on is in the church when we're getting off lines, when we're misusing our faith, maybe for selfish purposes or for financial gain. That's what Jesus was looking at there. Or to withhold maybe others from an opportunity to believe, which was maybe what was happening with the Gentiles, where that court was, where that took place. So that context there is important. I think it's worth noting, while Jesus was acting pretty powerfully there, he doesn't touch any people. He doesn't act in that way. Now, he touches property for sure, but I think there is something to note there about responses doing violence to people. And that should give us pause, certainly given God's commands to us and how we are to look at our brothers and sisters around the world as far as image bearers and all of that. And there was one other piece I thought of as well. Is I don't know if it's in every account. I know it's in Matthew's, is that Jesus does that. He flips the tables. He then, of course, quotes Scripture, which is another probably thing to keep in mind. He has, if I'm going to be acting this way, I better have God's word backing me up, right? It's not just me, like, hey, we're off here. You know, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Jesus quotes from the prophets there. But then right after that, what does he do? He heals some of the people that are there, some of the blind and the lame. And I thought that's important too. Jesus doesn't always just only point out what is wrong, the negative side. Then he says, this is what it's supposed to look like. This is what we are to be about. And I thought to myself, sometimes I miss that side of things. I'm happy to point out, like, you're wrong. This
you're missing
the point.
That gives us the sense of just, like, it's like, I'm so right here.
Yeah, and that, not to fill in really the hole that's left then, but what is this space for? What is this supposed to look like? And right there, it's the following verse. Jesus is doing this, and he's healing, and he's like, yeah, this is what the kingdom of heaven looks like. Not this, you know, kind of, you know, financial exchange or, you know, maybe excluding some people, but healing that God is bringing, maybe to people who would be excluded otherwise. And so that struck me as well, thinking about how he does that. So just a few thoughts, maybe. I do think there are times, remembering who we are, and we're not Jesus, but there are times we need to hold each other accountable or say, hey, we're missing the point here as God's people. We're kind of getting off track, but there's a way to do that.
And I really loved you pointing out that Jesus did not attack any people physically. And I mean, even if you look at the Garden of Gethsemane, when Peter draws his sword and cuts off the, which is, if there is ever a time for violence, it was at that point, and Jesus shamed him for it.
Yeah.
And that's just something that is so important for us to remember, that in our anger, do not sin.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so interesting, right? You think about the disciples there, and I think part of them is still reacting just like the way we want to react. You're like, we have a couple of swords here, and Jesus says, well, that's enough. Like, you're not quite getting it. We're not going to a sword fight here, but yeah, whatever. Bring them along. Because they're still thinking like, well, yeah, this is how we got to fight, right? We got to do it this way. And I think that's, we sometimes forget the strength, the armor, as we did that series earlier this year, that God's given to us, which is effective. But we want to fight with our own fleshly weapons, and they can be effective in the short term, but they cause more damage, lead to further conflict usually in the long term. So,
yeah. Well, appreciate those insights, Dan. What does next week look like?
Next week, self-control. So,
oh, boy.
Yeah. I think I know, talking to Rod, who's been doing our children's messages, he's got a special fruit plan for that one. But it is kind of the bookend with love, I think for good reason, because it really ties a lot of this together. If you think even about gentleness, self-control ties in very
closely.
Really
critical part of that.
And so, yeah, just to think about that, what it looks like, maybe some areas of life where that's important, maybe some examples, too, of how we see that, and, of course, thinking of God's own character in that, too. Looking forward to that. And then we're going to kind of do a summary on this, too, that week, that Sunday right before Thanksgiving. So Pastor Eric and myself are going to kind of tag team that one, be a little different kind of message. We're going to do more of a conversation and then try to involve the congregation in different ways in that conversation as we kind of recap all that we've talked about. So we're hoping that goes well. It'll be a little bit different, but it seems fitting to spend another week since we spent all this time thinking about the fruit of the Spirit.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Dan, for your time and your insights today. Thank you, all of you who have been listening, for your contribution and your being a part of this family. And we will see you again next week.